Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. In this audio, I'm going to cover Genesis 12, verses 10 through 20. I'm going to entitle it Abram and Sarai in Egypt. Our context is this. In the first part of Genesis 12, the first nine verses, we had the call of Abraham, either from Ur or Haran or both, to go to the Promised Land, and Abram left seeking a city which had no foundations. Heads to the Promised Land. So now he's there, and he's arrived first in Shechem, built an altar. He went south from Shechem down to Bethel, built an altar, and then he headed to the Negev, and then now there's a famine. And so that's where we'll pick it up here in Genesis 12, verse 10. Now, there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. The Negev, of course, is the southern desert region of Israel. Famine arose. Abram goes down to Egypt. Now, it says down to Egypt because Canaan is physically and geographically higher than Egypt. It's not like they had a map. We always look at a map and say you go down to the country from there. Well, no, this was actually physically why the scripture says it was down. Now, you wonder why, to escape a famine in Israel, would you go to Egypt? It's because of the geography of Egypt. The famine didn't affect Egypt badly because of the Nile River. The river always gave them a supply of water, as the NIV Study Bible says. Now, it's interesting that when this famine hit, Abram didn't go back to Ur. He was finished with that pagan place, his hometown. He went down to Egypt. Pragmatic decision. Now, one wonders. Abram is called by God to go to the Promised Land, and when he gets there, what is he faced with very early on? A famine. I can imagine Abram saying, well, God, why did you do this? Why did you call me and put me in this difficult place? Ah, there's some good sermon applications there. How many times has God called you to do something and everything immediately goes wrong? But it was still God's will for you to do it. Now, the English word sojourn here, used by the New American Standard, he's sojourning in Egypt. Sojourn is a temporary visit. That's what the word means. So that means that Abram meant to return to the Promised Land. His life later on showed that his heart was always there in the Promised Land, not in Egypt. Now, this famine, as Adam Clark, is the first famine on record. I'm sure it wasn't the first famine that ever existed. Clark says it's because of the sin of the inhabitants. I don't know how he knows that, or somebody said that. I don't know why somebody would say that, because sometimes famines happen, even though it's not the sin of the inhabitants. It's like bad things happen to good people, or good things happen to bad people, and you can't make a one-on-one connection with calamity and moral culpability, in my humble opinion. We go down to Genesis 12, verse 11. It came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "See now, I know that you are a beautiful woman." Well, that's nice. He gave his wife a compliment, but that's not what he was trying to do here. Now, Sarah was already 65 years old. According to the NIV Study Bible, Abram was 75, and you think, well, now, 65, you're saying that she's such a beautiful woman. In fact, she was so beautiful later on, she caught the eye of Pharaoh's courtiers, who suggested that she be put into Pharaoh's harem. So she had to be very beautiful to attract the Pharaoh. Well, why is this not really a problem? Well, we know that Sarah lived to be 127 years old, according to Wikipedia. If she's 65 here, according to the NIV Study Bible, that means she was roughly halfway through her life. In today's terms, that would be about 40 or so, maybe earlier, maybe younger. Well, women that are 40 can be beautiful easily. I mean, there's lots of beautiful 40-year-old women even today. In fact, now, even today in modern times, when lifespans are much shorter, women in their 60s are often portrayed as beautiful. I just saw, I think it was Christie Brinkley, some model is still hanging around in her 60s with her beautiful hair. Of course, I'm sure half of it's fake. But, you know, she still looked pretty beautiful. Makeup can do a lot. But anyway, it's not a problem that Sarah was a beautiful woman at the age of 65. Now, Moses is writing Genesis, probably on the Exodus, which was about, I don't know, 400 years later, 500 years later, maybe. And somebody, I didn't write down which commentator I got this from, but somebody suggested that Moses probably was thinking about Abram consciously as he wrote Genesis, because Abraham was a member of the promised race down there in pagan Egypt, just like Moses had just been a member of the promised seed, just as he had been, unfortunately, down in Egypt. Abram got out and Moses got out. Abram gets out later. We'll see how. Let's move on. Genesis 12, verses 12 through 13. "And when the Egyptians see you, Sarah," Abram still talking to Sarai, "and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me. But they will let you live. Because they have to kill Abram to get to the wife so she would be free to remarry. Got to be moral about it, you know, when you murder somebody. They will let you live. Please say that you are my sister so that it may go well with me because of you and that I may live on account of you. Now, Abram was fearing the Egyptians in general. He might have been fearing the Pharaoh. And if he was fearing the Pharaoh, that means Abram was rich enough to command attention as he came into town, that he would attract the attention of the top officials, top executives of the Egyptian government. Or it might be he was just afraid of the Egyptians in general that somebody would take Sarah. But at any rate, he lied. Now, why did Abram feel it was necessary to lie? Well, he felt he had to go to Egypt because of the famine. He had no perceived options to stay in Canaan and not lie about Sarah. Well, critics of Abraham, and there are plenty, I'm going to finish up this audio with Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown and Clark raking Abraham over the coals, but I'm going to defend him here in just a minute. But critics of Abraham claim he was not acting chivalrously. Well, let's put yourself in Abram's shoes. He had basically three options as I see it. The first option was to go back to Canaan when he saw Sarah was in danger. Well, he could do that and he would starve to death as well as Sarah. That's not an option. Option two, he could tell the truth and inform the Egyptians that Sarah was his wife. The likely result, he would not be killed. Now, if he's killed and you say, well, he should have sacrificed himself for his wife and he should have been a good husband. Aren't we supposed to lay down our lives for our wives? Well, think about this. What happens to the call of God for Abram to go to the promised land? Didn't God have a purpose for that? Well, you say, well, Abram didn't know about it. Well, yes, he did. What happens to the promise that Abram's descendants would inherit the land? He had already had that promise. That's in Genesis 12:7, which is previous to this time, prior to this time. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. Genesis 12:7, first part of the verse. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. So, if he dies, what happens to God's promise? In fact, if you look at it later, what happens to the offspring of Abraham, which include Jesus Christ? Okay, so that's option number two. Tell the truth. Likely result, he's killed. And what about Sarah? Folks, if he died, Sarah would live the rest of her life in a pagan harem, and she would never see the promised land either. Is that really an option to tell the truth there? Would you have told the truth? Option three, tell a half-truth and say Sarah was his sister. That's what he did. Now, here's the possible result that could happen from that. The Egyptians might leave him alone because they say, well, he's a sister. We don't want to take his sister away from him. There's no indication here that Abraham foresaw Sarah would be taken into a harem, so he might be just thinking, well, they're not going to kill me for my sister. They might come ask for her hand. I mean, it's legal to marry somebody's sister, but it's not legal to marry somebody's wife, and so they would figure if we're going to get her, we're going to have to kill Abraham. But they wouldn't have to kill Abraham to get his sister. And again, Abraham didn't know that Pharaoh would take Sarah into his harem, so that was an unforeseen result to him. And even if he did foresee that Sarah would be taken into the Egyptian Pharaoh's harem, it would take about a year before Sarah would have sex with Pharaoh. The concubines in these ancient kingdoms, like in Egypt, they went through a long training process. The girls had to be taught how to do their hair, the makeup, clothes, jewelries, oils, perfumes, sexual techniques. I mean, they went to concubine school 101, and the eunuchs were their instructors. And even then, most of them were not chosen by the Pharaoh to have sex with because there were so many of them. Sarah very well could have avoided having sex with Pharaoh. Given Abram's constrained circumstances, I believe that was a perfectly reasonable gamble to take. And during that time of Sarah's training process, the famine could have ended and Abraham could have gone to Pharaoh and says, actually, she's my wife. I'd like her back. So I don't blame Abram at all for doing what he did, but I apparently am in a minority position on that. Now let's look at this claim that Abraham said to Sarah, please say that you are my sister. Is he asking Sarah to lie? No, actually, Sarah was Abraham's half-sister. Now, people are looking at the family tree of Abraham, dispute whether Sarah was Abraham's half-sister or his half-niece. I'm going to briefly go through with that. I covered this in a previous audio. I think it was chapter 11, previous chapter. It all depends on how you take daughter in the genealogy there. In chapter 11, it is, at the end of chapter 11. How do you take daughter? Sarah was Terah's daughter or granddaughter? The word is ambiguous. If she was his granddaughter, it would work like this. Terah had Haran, a son, Abraham's brother. And then Haran had two daughters, Iscah and Milcah. Iscah is the same as Sarah. And so then Abraham married his niece. be a half niece, actually. I think these family tree names drive me crazy. But anyway, it would be his niece. But I think it's more likely that Terah had another wife who had Sarah, and then the wife that bore Abram, Nahor, and Haran was a different wife, and so therefore Sarah was his half-sister. And so when he told the Pharaoh that Sarah, when he asked Sarah to tell everybody that Sarah was his sister, he was not asking her to lie. Now, he was asking her to deceive, though, so I don't think that's a technical defense. He technically didn't lie, but actually he did, because he was deceiving people by telling a half-truth. A half-truth good as a fool is as good as a lie. There's no difference to me. However, I think he was justified in lying. This would be a great chapter for a Christian ethics class. Now, interestingly, this half-truth that Abraham was Sarah's sister, Abraham used it again in a different situation when he was in Gerar, whose king was Abimelech, Genesis 20, verses 1 from 2. From there, Abraham traveled to the region of the Negev and settled between Kadesh and Shur. That's in the desert between Israel and Egypt, in the Negev, south of Israel. While he was staying in Gerar, a little kinglet there, a little kingdom, a little tiny principate, Abraham said about his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." So King Abimelech of Gerar had Sarah brought to him. Now here in Genesis 13, unlike in Genesis 20, in Genesis 13, Abram didn't use this sister defense against the Pharaoh, to protect himself against the Pharaoh. And I wondered why, and I think the answer to that is because he didn't need to. He'd already spread the word everywhere that Sarah was his sister, and so Pharaoh would have probably heard it. So I think that explains that. In Genesis 20, with Abimelech of Gerar, he directly said, Sarah is my sister. And interestingly enough, like father, like son, Isaac pulled the same stunt in Gerar later on, same place, same little principality down there in the south of Israel. Genesis 26:7, when the men of the place asked about his wife, that's Isaac's wife, who was Rebekah, he said, "She is my sister," for he was afraid to say "my wife," thinking the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. Apparently Sarah had beautiful daughters, or at least a beautiful daughter. Same situation, which is kind of interesting. I guess Isaac learned how to do that from his father. Now, I'm going to defend Abraham's honor here in just a minute, but I would like to point out that I don't think that you should defend Abraham, that we should defend Abraham by saying that he told the truth. He told a technical truth. Yes, he was Sarah's sister, but it was a half-truth because Sarah was also his wife. He told a half-truth with an intent to deceive, and when you either twist the facts or shade the facts or only tell part of the facts with an intent to deceive, in effect, you're lying. I, however, do not think that this lie was unjustifiable. I believe this was justifiable self-defense, in my opinion. But we'll get into that in just a minute. Genesis 12, verses 14 through 16. It came about when Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore he treated Abram well for her sake, and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. I think the donkeys is mentioned twice. The first donkeys, I suspect, were male donkeys, and the second group of donkeys were female donkeys. But the point is that all of these animals were a measure of wealth at that time for a nomad like Abraham. They didn't have coins. They wandered around with their animals. So Abraham went from famine in Israel to wealth in Egypt, but he had to lie to do it. In my opinion, I think that lie was justified. I say that because of the three options I gave you earlier that Abram had when he was confronted with his situation in Egypt, and I think he really had no other choice but to lie. Now, camels are mentioned as a gift from Pharaoh to Abram. Camels were not used domestically until very much later, the NIV Study Bible says. However, archaeology has shown that they were in fact used during Abram's time. Now notice that the Pharaoh's officials praised her to Pharaoh. They were on, you know, these eunuch types were always out there looking for good wives for the harem. And they must have seen Sarah and says, "Ooh, she is really beautiful." I mean, they actually went to the Pharaoh. So again, Abram must have had access to the top officials in the land, probably because he was doing real well when he went down there. He was probably not a poor guy. Or it could be he attracted attention because he was a foreigner coming into the land. But at any rate, Sarah was not hidden. She was found out. She was taken into the harem. Now, the question is, did Pharaoh have sex with Sarah? If so, Abraham would seem to be a sinner here and a pretty gross sinner, but she probably did not have sex with Pharaoh. I've already mentioned this earlier. But Adam Clark backs me up, so I'll quote him as an authority to help out my case. Clark says that newly arrived women into harems had to go through certain purification, and that took a considerable time before she would be brought to Pharaoh. During that time is when the plagues came, which we'll see here in the next several verses. The plagues came and Pharaoh tossed Sarah out of the harem, and that was probably before she had had sex with Pharaoh. We go now to Genesis 12, verses 17 through 20. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go." Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. Now, there's a moral problem here, a potential problem. How could Pharaoh be blamed for something he didn't know about? Well, could we say that, well, ignorance of the law is no excuse? He shouldn't have taken her in there because she was a married woman? I don't think that's a good defense of God's honor to say that. Now, we could point out that the plague actually stopped a sin from occurring. And we also could point out that the scripture here in verse 17 nowhere says that the Pharaoh was morally culpable for what he did. It just said the plagues came. In my opinion, this was just God's way to let him get go of Sarah. A powerful Pharaoh might need some strong convincing. After all, Sarah was an extraordinarily beautiful woman, and Pharaoh was an extraordinarily powerful man. He's just not going to let one of his most prized harem possessions go just because Abram comes up and says, "Pharaoh, I think there's a mistake here. That's really my wife." Now, I mentioned earlier that Abram might have thought that he could do that, and maybe he could. But he was in a bad situation, and so he had to grasp at straws. But it's quite likely that Pharaoh would have listened to such a plea and said, "No, I'm sorry, Abram, you told me she was his sister. I'm going to keep her. She was your sister. I'm going to keep her. You're just out of luck." Well, with this plagues behind Abraham now, Abram's got a strong case. "You don't want to have sex with my wife, do you, Pharaoh? And you don't want these plagues to continue, do you?" So Pharaoh let his people go. Different Pharaoh, of course, from Moses' Pharaoh, but he let him go. And not only did he let him go, he gave him, Abram, a bunch of wealth, a bunch of animals. Now, here's a question. How did Pharaoh find out Sarah was married? Well, here's some suggestions. John Gill says his priest and diviners figured it out. I don't think so. Gill says that the plagues caused him to inquire. Now, how would that work? How would he know of anybody to inquire about Sarah, just because of the plagues? Well, this is how it could have happened. He invites Sarah into his harem, and then all of a sudden the plagues occur. He might have put two and two together. He might have suspected Sarai, because the plagues came at the same time she did. That's an interesting speculation. But anyway, however he found out, he wanted to get rid of her because he thought she was a Jonah in his harem causing plagues on his kingdom. Now this question, "Why did you not tell me that she was your wife?" That could be a request for information, or it could just be a rhetorical exclamation. "You idiot, why didn't you tell me?" Of course, he knows why. You could say that Pharaoh knew why Abram didn't tell him, because Abram was trying to protect his wife from the Pharaoh's harem. So this might not be a request for information. Pharaoh may or may not have guessed that Abram had a legitimate fear about the wife being taken away from him. And so in that case, you could argue this is a request for information, not a rhetorical explanation. And why in the world did you do that? I suspect the latter. He's saying, "How could you do this to me, the Pharaoh?" He knows why he did it, but he's just saying, why did you do it, in the sense of, how could you do this to me, the exalted Pharaoh? At any rate, verse 20, Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away. So this story ends happily. They go down to Egypt during a famine. They save their lives physically, and they go back richer than when they came out. Now, this just shows you follow God, and I don't care how bad things are around you, he will protect you. He will never leave you, and he will never forsake you. And that verse in Hebrews 11 is said in the context of money, wealth, and this is Abraham's situation. He was in a bad situation, but God took care of him as far as wealth is concerned. Now, those plagues actually not only encouraged Pharaoh to get rid of Sarah, they also encouraged Abram not to stay in Egypt. He might have been tempted to stay down there since he was so wealthy now. But a plague? Oh, let's get out of here. Let's go back to Israel. that plague might have been God's way of helping Abram to not forget the promises in the promised land. Let's finish this up with a restatement of the idea that Abram sinned in what he did with Sarah. I'm going to give you two opinions from Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown. Clark says it's ironic that Abram had enough faith to leave Haran, but not enough faith to protect Sarah. Here's his quotation, quote, Abram is a second time called to leave his country, kindred, and father's house and go to a place he knew not. Everything was apparently against him but the voice of God. This to Abram was sufficient. He could trust his maker and knew he could not do wrong in following his command. He is therefore proposed to us in the scriptures as a pattern of faith, patience, and loving obedience. Well, Clark's starting out saying all kinds of nice things about Abraham. When he received the call of God, he spent no time in useless reasonings about the call itself, his family circumstances, the difficulties in the way, etc., etc. He was called, and he departed, and this is all we hear on the subject. Implicit faith in the promise of God and prompt obedience to his commands become us, not only as his creatures, but as sinners called to separate from evil workers and wicked ways, and travel by that faith which worketh by love, in the way that leads to the paradise of God. How greatly must the faith of this blessed man have been tried when coming to the very land in which he has promised so much blessedness, he finds instead of plenty a grievous famine. Who in his circumstances would not have gone back to his own country and kindred? Still he has not stumbled. Prudence directs him to turn aside and go to Egypt till God shall choose to remove this famine. Is it to be wondered at that in this tried state, he should have serious apprehensions for the safety of his life? He's sort of defending Abraham right now. Sarai, his affectionate wife and faithful companion, he supposes he shall lose. Her beauty, he suspects, will cause her to be desired by men of power, whose will he shall not be able to resist. If he appear to be her husband, his death he supposes to be certain. If she pass for his sister, he may be well used on her account. He will not tell a lie. Well, he did tell a lie. Mr. Clark, I'm sorry, he did. But he is tempted to prevaricate by suppressing a part of the truth. Okay, that's the same thing as a lie. Here is a weakness which, however, we may be inclined to pity and excuse it, as I personally pity and excuse it. We should never imitate. Ooh, really? It is recorded with its own condemnation. Condemnation, he ended up rich with a bunch of animals. He should have risked all rather than have prevaricated. In other words, he should not have put his wife at risk. Is chivalry dead? But how could he think of lightly giving up such a wife? Surely he would not risk his life for the protection and safety of a good wife. Is not worthy of one. Oh, Abraham's not even worthy of being married to Sarah. Here his faith was deficient. He still credited to the general promise and acted on that faith in reference to it. But he did not use his faith in reference to intervening circumstances to which it was equally applicable. Well, as I said earlier, what would you have done, Mr. Clark? You'd have taken the other options. If you'd have gone back to Israel, you would have died of famine. If you'd have told the truth, you would have gotten yourself killed, perhaps, probably, or at least potentially, which would have killed the promised land and all the promises, and you would have gotten Sarah locked away in a harem for the rest of your life. So you really think that Adam did a bad thing here by lying. Jameson Fawcett Brown said that when Pharaoh said, take her away and go, why did you do this to me? This was a humiliating rebuke, a most humiliating rebuke from the Pharaoh, and Abram deserved it, as Jameson Fawcett and Brown erroneously, in my humble opinion, say. I don't think so. I think not only did he act in faith with accordance to the promise, but he acted in faith on how he kept the promise alive by saving his skin and saving Sarah's skin. You know, there's so many times when violence or lying is justified in self-defense when people are put in these incredibly difficult circumstances because of the evil of their enemies. And it's just amazing to me how people, in the comfort of their armchairs, sit there and say, well, that's sinful. That shouldn't be done. I got a great story I just heard on a podcast of English history. Boniface, the famous missionary. He was born in Devon, England, late 7th century, and he died mid 8th century. He was old, and he was on a mission trip to Frisia, a second mission trip. That's to the coast of Holland, and he had a bunch of monks with him. And he's on his way, and he was accosted, his band was accosted by a bunch of robbers. And the monks prepared to defend themselves, and Boniface, sounding very spiritual, said, it is not good, brethren, that we should repay evil for evil. It is our duty as Christians to do good unto all men. And he was talking along that line, and as a result, they were all slaughtered to a man. And thus the end of one of the early Western Church's greatest missionaries. We do not need to confuse the Sermon on the Mount with self-defense. Jesus never meant for people to sit around and get slaughtered all in the name of Christian charity and love. He didn't turn his cheek when he got slapped during his trial. And why did he ask his disciples to carry two swords with them when they went out on one of their mission trips at Luke 22? Why did he do that? So they could maybe cook pancakes on the swords or maybe stick them in marshmallows in the fire? No, to kill robbers with in case they were attacked or to scare robbers off. Hopefully that wouldn't happen, but there's nothing wrong with self-defense. And there's nothing wrong with what Abraham did here, trying to save his life and his wife's life. We need to get off of our high horses and quit criticizing the guy. All right, enough of that. It's all my opinion. I could be wrong. I don't think I am. We are now finished with Genesis chapter 13, Genesis 12, I'm sorry, verses 10 through 20. In our next audio, we will turn to Genesis 13 and do the whole chapter, verses 1 through 18, when we read the story of Abraham separating himself from Lot. Hope to see you in that audio. Hope you enjoyed this one.